Oi, you know what time it is? You're tuned in listening to Draw That Aussie Metal Guy. Make sure to hit that like and subscribe button so you don't miss any of his content when it drops. And remember, stay brutal, you mad dogs. Roof.
G'day, how the hell are you going? It's time for another edition of the Bloody Legends with myself, Jai, that Aussie metal guy, and my awesome co-host, Jim Taylor. And today, tonight, wherever you are, we have Tony West of Blacklist Union. Cheers, yes, Tony, sir. For joining us, my friend.
Yep, thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure, man. First off, can you tell us a little bit about how Blacklist Union began, man? I'm keen to find out a little bit more about you guys, the band in general.
The birth of the band, almost 20 years ago, 2004, we started writing for the first record. And, we played around in Hollywood back in 2005 when there was still a rock scene here. And then we put out our first full-length record in 2006. And we're about to release our fifth, actually.
Awesome.
Now, so.
Yeah, well, the first album was After the Morning, wasn't it? What was it like making that one, man?
So After the Morning, morning, it's like meaning morning death, not morning time. And my girlfriend at the time was in this band called Betty Blowtorch. Her name was Bianca. And she was killed in a car accident on the road in 2001 in New Orleans. And event changed my fucking life, almost destroyed my life. That record is kind of in tribute to her, After the Morning, because I don't know how, other than angels and God and, having the ability to like fucking carry on, I don't know how I made it through that shit. But that was my first record, and I'm very proud of that record,
Yeah, it definitely would have taken a lot of strength of character and person to not only overcome that loss, but I've been in a position like that where I've had to overcome some hard loss, and you come to a point where you go, okay, and I can either write myself off and just lose myself in the grief and the loss, or I can use that memory of that person to try and make something positive of my life, because that's what they would want.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
There's a song on that record called Dying to Live. And I recorded that on the 4-year anniversary of Bianca's death. I had it set up where I went to her grave and I told the producer, look, I'm going to go to the grave and then I want to go right to the studio and track this song, because that song was fully about her. So I did that. I went to the grave. I prayed and it's like, all right, Bianca, please, be with me. And beeline to the studio, put the cans on, sing the song. And then I remember I looked to my left and our producer and bass player, they had their jaws hanging open, and I was like, oh god, did I just suck ass? And they're like, no dude, you nailed that shit all the way through. And it was the first time, it was the first time I've ever nailed a song all the way through. I've only done it 2 or 3 times since. It's a rare feat for a singer, but yeah, so that happened. And I remember when I heard the playback of that song, Dying to Live, it was the moment that I got peace about her death. And I remember our producer looked at me and he saw me crying. And I remember he had to turn around really quick because he would have started crying too. But that was the moment that fucking healed me, was that song and the death of Bianca.
Though.
And that's, yeah.
Yeah, it's an amazing track, and you also have a really, really great voice from that first album there. Kind of tell me a little bit about how you began singing and kind of where this kind of all started for you as an artist.
I mean, dude, when I was 5 years old, I asked my uncle, who's that girl in that poster? And he said, that's no girl, that's David Bowie. And my life was never the fucking same again.
That's wonderful.
And then shortly after that, he took me to see AC/DC at Madison Square Garden. And I was like, okay, this is what the fuck I'm going to do with my life. Mm. And, music, I grew up in a lot of punk rock. I grew up in New York City. I was into a lot of hardcore punk rock and learned everything, about politics and fucking all kinds of shit, from punk rock and hardcore. And music saved my life, shaped my life. And I've just, from the gate, I remember being 6, 7 years old writing songs and shit. Like, I didn't know what I was doing, but I would come up with melodies and lyrics and shit, you know?
Sure. Yeah, well, how was that from going from New York, growing up in New York, then moving over to LA as well? That would have been kind of...
That's a very drastic change.
A bit of a changer, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's both American cities that you don't want to drive in, both of them, you know, they're both super jaded, like me. But, you know, I mean, I love New York. You know, I was there last year in the East Village, and it was sort of heartbreaking for me because there's no punk rock or rock and roll left in the East Village, you know, so that was very kind of disheartening. And but the same as in Los Angeles, man, there's no scene really in Los Angeles. So, but you know, those things evolve, they move, there's other places they go to. There's great scenes in Detroit, there's great scenes in Houston, Dallas, you know, so those scenes move. But for me, the scene nowadays is being on tour and playing a different city every night. That's the best way I can kind of accommodate going back to my roots, you know. So.
Yeah. Our next album, Breaking Bread with the Devil. Tell us a little bit about that album and that release that came out in 2009. Great album.
Yeah. So, you know, Breaking Bread with the Devil means inviting the wrong people into your life and to your heart. You know, I had a friend who I've known for years. She was like, "You need to stop worshiping the devil." When that came out, I was like, that's not about the devil. It's a term that I coined, you know, it means, you know, inviting the wrong people into your life. But so, you know, 10 days after releasing After the Morning, and I told you that was in tribute to Bianca, 10 days after releasing After the Morning, my first wife, Tracy, died from fucking cancer. So I was thrown right back into the mourning phase, you know, of death again. And a lot of those songs, 65 Steps Away, which is on that record, which we have a video for, you know, that's about how many steps away it is from Tracy's grave to Bianca's grave at Hollywood Forever in LA, where Cornell's buried, Dee Dee Ramone, Scott Weiland, everybody's buried. But so, you know, Tracy and Bianca's graves are 65 steps away from each other. I did a song called 65 Steps Away. And in that video, it's me and my son walking away because, once again, walking through the fucking darkness of life, you know, life is such a roller coaster. And the victory at the end was, here I am with my little boy and we're walking away. You know what I mean? So there's also another song on that record called Feel Me, which, you know, I was living in smack in the middle off Hollywood Boulevard at the time. And my friend was like, "Come downstairs for a second. I want to meet you." I'm like, "Okay." So I meet my friend. I go back upstairs. I had this girl sleeping in my bed. And all of a sudden I hear this crying and I'm like, "Fuck, that's Tracy crying." And I'm like, "Well, it can't be Tracy crying. She's dead." So as I go up the stairs to my apartment, the crying gets louder and it's like, "Fuck, that's in my apartment." So I think it must be the girl that I have in my bed crying. So I rush open to get the door open, man. I fucking swing the door open. The crying stops. The girl's asleep, dead asleep, right?
Right.
So a week later, I'm in that apartment again, and I hear the crying again, dude. And I said, "Tracy, what is it?" I go, "If they're telling you to go somewhere, go. I'll meet you there later." I was like, "I forgive you. I know you forgive me. I'll see you later." And I never heard the crying again after that. And that's what the song "Feel Me" is about off that record. So every Blacklist Union song, there is a story of my life behind every fucking song. There's no like, "Oh, this sounds cool" or "This is clever." Like, it's all real life shit. And, you know, across the board, like, yeah, death, but also the birth of my son, you know, he's on that record, like "Say Hello." Yep. There's a song off that record that I wrote about my son. So, you know, these are things that as humans, we can all relate to these fucking things, you know? So it's so important for me, like keeping it real. Like, I don't want to contrive anything to sound cool or sound a certain way or none of that shit, you know? So.
Yeah. So music's definitely been that real rock and something that you can express yourself through and kind of push through some of these tougher moments in life and even some of these better moments in life.
Yes, and extremely therapeutic for some of the traumatic shit too, you know?
Yeah, man, that's tough, dude, losing people to cancer. I'm currently going through that as well, man. So definitely hit a nerve and probably why I really, enjoyed that as well, that album. Till Death Do Us Part, man. Tell us a little bit about that album, man.
You know, man, Till Death Do Us Part. So, you know, it's, the first three records were like about expelling darkness and pain, you know.
Felt that.
Till Death Do Us Part was like, dude, I was so fucked up on pills back then. Like, I don't remember writing the record. I have a couple of bits and pieces of recording it. I really don't remember recording it. I mean, I know I did. I have the lyrics still that I wrote. But, you know, man, it's a fucking miracle I made it through that shit, because the death of Bianca, the death of Tracy, like that, you know, all of these things where I'm a sensitive fucking artist, dude, you know, like, you know, and the death of people really is, it's the hardest tough thing in life. Yeah. I mean,
extreme loss, man, you know, and that's a lot to deal with.
But, you know, the solace is I'm not the only one, because I've gotten lots of emails and messages from people and people I've met and people have come to our shows and stuff that say, dude, your song helped me get through the death of my loved one. Or, you know, we played this song at, you know, my loved one's funeral or whatever. But there's also, you know, like I said, the first three are filled with darkness and shit. And, you know, the light started coming, you know, breaking bread with the devil when my son was born, you know, say hello. And so, so Death Do Us Part was about kind of trying to assess what the fuck, to move on and let go of the weight that I've been carrying around. I mean, there's great songs in there. Alabama Slammer is about this girl. Actually, her name was Amber Lake. She was my girlfriend. She won Rock of Love. You know, you probably remember her, but she, she broke my fucking heart, you know, and she was from Alabama. There, two of my favorite songs on that record are I Do and Game Over. So I Do is such a powerful song. I like that song. I love singing it. But, you know, it's about, you know, my whole life, I try to not need people and not need anything or anyone. But the truth is, man, I do need people and I do need things. And, I, and especially I don't need things as much as I need true friends, you know, and, you know, my friends for me are my family and shit. Like, my family was fucked up, you know, so I got to choose my own family, you know, my children are my family, their mothers are my family. And then Game Over, you know, I really like that song too. And lyrically, you know, that song was about all the fucking hardcore drinking and drugging I did as a kid and survived. And like, so many of my friends didn't survive. Like, if I wanted to live and like be here for my son and then, you know, later my daughter, like, Game Over, dude, like, that shit is over if you want to live, you know what I mean? So, you know, I chose life. You know,
I feel that,
I
Tony.
Made it out of the darkness.
I feel that, Tony, because we've probably all been in that position. I lost my brother really young in a bad house fire, and I kind of lost my way for a while, real bad drug problem as well. And it took me a few years to kind of go, hey, what the fuck am I doing? Wasting my life here, and the person that I'm grieving would not want this for me. They would want me to better my life and try and make changes and do things in a positive way. And damn, that Game Over did hit, and I did feel that track as well. Is Game Over, man, move on, you know what I mean? And kind of making that album, it must have, like as you said, there was kind of real disconnection because you were going through this real traumatic time and kind of getting over that problem with the pills and that, because we've all, people have been there, you know.
Indeed.
And
you've
made this life of yours and, you know, made it into a positive thing as well, you know what I mean? And you do feel it with those first three albums. Kind of a cathartic experience.
I mean, they're fucking dark, dude. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm lucky I made it out of the darkness. And there's another song on Till Death Do Us Part called Blown Away, which was actually written about Mike Starr from Alice in Chains, who was my roommate.
Oh,
and that, that came out before he even died. You know, there's a line in there, like, too far gone to be saved. Like, man, I loved Mike. He was fucking a true rock and roll soldier, like, for real. But like, he was his own worst enemy and shit, you know. He's like, and anyone will tell you that. But you know, he was my friend and my brother, and you know, that song was written about Mike, so in part.
Beautiful. That's beautiful, yeah. Though, Tony.
Yeah. Rest in peace. I also did notice a couple of collabs you've done as well. I think was with Stone Temple Pilots, man. Tell us about that, because they sounded bloody cool as hell. I was just rocking to that this morning, actually.
Yeah, you know, so I, you know, I submitted when they were looking for a singer. I submitted like every other singer did, but I actually got a call back, and then, you know, they wanted me to record three more songs with them, which I did, and man, I was honored to do it. You know, fucking Stone Temple Pilots. I mean, they're a huge influence for me. And then Scott, you know, Scott's wife actually loved my versions. And, you know, I think like the spirit of the songs were there, but it's not like, I don't sound like Scott exactly, 'cause I'm not Scott, you know? So, but I felt like the spirit of the songs were there. And like, I was like, man, you know, if I've been playing these songs for 25 years, I would want to have a new energy to the song, you know, like, so, but that wasn't what they were thinking. You know, they, I mean, I love Stone Temple Pilots, and, but I think they got a carbon copy of Scott, you know, with what they did. So, yeah. And that's, I understand, you know, they got that back catalog and all that kind of shit, and they wanted to play it safe. So,
I like what you done with it, dude. It sounded really, really bloody good. It was cross little spin on it as well.
Your own identity with it.
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
So cool, dude.
Yeah, I was listening to it going, man, this guy can sing. I'd listen to those albums, and I jumped over and I spotted those, and I'm like, dude, really? You done this? And I sent it over to Jim this morning, and they were really good, man. Kudos to you on that,
dude,
as well.
Dude,
thank you so much.
That's what I was thinking of too. Like, that, like, not only to get into the reasons why, you know, lyrically you've written what you do, your delivery, bro, is just when you open your mouth, man, you believe it. So
thank you,
I hope that doesn't sound too light by any
means.
Cool. Oh my god, awesome.
Yeah, you have that really captivating and engaging voice, and then with For Back sure. to Momo, you kind of feel like, oh, you know what I mean? After those first three albums, it's a rocking album. It has some moments where it really hits you in the feels, but it's a really, really good album. Tell us
Thank
a little
you.
Bit about
I mean,
that one.
Back, you know, Back to Momo, I love that record. That was with, I wrote with Todd Youth, who played with Danzig and Ace Frehley and Glenn Campbell.
Yes.
He was in a bunch of, Todd was in a bunch of hardcore bands back in the day, like Murphy's Law, Agnostic Front, Cro-Mags. But, you know, we were good friends and we were writing partners. And I was like, bro, let's get back to the, like, I already casted out the darkness. Let's get back to the fucking rock, you know? So sure. It was all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, Back to Momo. And, I mean, me and Todd were definitely heavily influenced by punk rock. We love Turbo Negro. We love, you know, fucking GBH, we love the Backyard Babies, we love AC/DC, and you know, with Todd, I didn't have to say, hey, check out this band, check out that band, like he already had it all within him, you know. So you know, we set out to make a kick-ass rock and roll record, and I really think, you know, we did that, and that record was compared to Rocks and Appetite and all kinds of shit.
Yes, sir.
I mean, there's so many songs I love on that record. I like Meet Me on Zen Street's one of my favorites. It's All About You, Mirror Mirror on the Wall. Like, of course, you know, Evil Eye. I can tell you a story about Evil Eye. I wrote that about my mother. You know, Todd was auditioning for Guns N' Roses. And so Todd wrote Evil Eye for Axl. And Axl didn't want it. And then they ended up getting DJ Aspa instead of Todd. This is before, you know, Slash and Duff came back. So when we were writing this record, Todd was like, dude, I wrote this song for Axl. Like, do you want to hear it? I'm like, fuck yeah. So you know, I heard the music and I was like, oh, this is killer. And I wrote the melodies and lyrics and we came up with Evil Eye. But the music was written for Axl, and you know, he didn't want that song. I also love Super Jaded. Read Between the Lines is one of my favorites. Mm. And then of course, bro, you're in Australia. Fucking Rock and Roll Outlaw, dude. Rose Tattoo.
Yep.
I mean, I'm a huge Rose Tattoo fan. Like, I mean, Even on the Tobacco's nice. Part record, we covered
Angry Anderson, man. Yeah.
Dude.
Such I always a gem. Love it when but I hear people mention Rose Tattoo because you hear them go, oh, ACDC oh, yeah. all the time. But Rose Tattoo, man.
No, they were a precursor. And, and it's funny, they don't realize with Angry Anderson, they only know him from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. And it was like he was actually the first guy. He had that AC/DC rasp. Yeah. I'm sorry. Which Tony, you've got this interesting way of delivery that reminds me of not only Brian Johnson but Tom Kiefer from Cinderella. Nice.
I love Tom Kiefer, dude. Tom Kiefer is one of my favorite singers. Yeah.
Awesome. But that being said, you're Tony West. So I want to make sure but you have influences that I hear in that. But it's funny with that's funny here, Rose Tattoo, because they were so seminal to kind of that the AC/DC sound, the Guns N' Roses sound.
Yeah.
By extension, Nazareth. So anyway, I'm sorry. That was my two cents.
No, I mean,
this is so cool, brother.
Rose Tattoo, bro. Not a lot of Americans know Rose Tattoo, and for me, they're fucking huge. Like when I was such an AC/DC, kid growing up, but then I was well into my 20s when I discovered Rose Tattoo, and I was like, how the fuck did I miss this? You know?
Yeah, dude.
And I always wondered. I was like, why didn't Angry Anderson become the singer of AC/DC after, Bon Scott? I mean,
Bon Scott, I love
Brian Johnson, Back in Black, and For Those About to Rock. After that, I don't really, like anything, unfortunately. Yeah. I've tried. But dude, did you see when any video of Axl singing for AC/DC? Like, he sounded so fucking good, dude. I mean, he was so good. He sang the Brian songs better than Brian has in 30 years, I thought,
It's almost like you want to see them switch, like see Brian with Guns N' Roses and Axl with I know that sounds crazy, but I think they would kill them.
It's funny we're having this conversation. Like, for me, I love all these old rock bands, but I'm also loving the rock scene now. Like bands like yourself, sir. Blacklist Union, and all these other great rock bands that are coming through now. It kind of does my head in sometimes when I hear people go, rock is dead. It's like, open your fucking eyes and explore. There's so many great rock bands
coming out
now and through. And with this new material, I think it's been, nearly 8 years since, 2015, since the Back to Momo album. And you're coming out with the Queen of Everything. It must be great to kind of start cracking out some new material towards this new album dropping in September.
1,000%. Yeah,
I mean, I'm so glad to be back. And, the Queen of Everything is about my my wife,
Good.
But, I did the Back to Momo record, and then, Todd died.
Yeah.
Todd Hugh died, and who I wrote the record with in 2018. So I was like,
wow,
I can't let this destroy me. I'm like, Bianca's death, Tracy, my first wife's death, so many other friends' death. One of my closest friends, Mike Starr. Then I lose Todd Youth. And I was like, I can't let this destroy me. So I went with my wife to the Amazon jungle in Peru with the Shipibo Indians and did ayahuasca 5 times.
Nice.
And that shit was fucking so healing and life-changing. Like, I mean, this was the most spiritual shit you could possibly do. I mean, there's nothing really... There's no higher tier than doing ayahuasca and plant medicines, especially the ayahuasca, because that's like indigenous, tribal. I mean, I was there with the Indians in the jungle with the fucking monkeys, with the lions, all this shit. And so Letters from the Psych Ward, all these songs are about that. Like they're about, Letters from the Psych Ward, like, everybody's been through where, we feel like we're going to fucking lose our goddamn minds, just trying to survive in this world. And like, the price of groceries, the price of gas, the political fucking climate, all this shit, you know, and driving and this road rage fucking shit, or, you know, going on your news feed and seeing like kids getting hurt or worse, or their parents leaving them in their fucking cars for, and the kids die, like all this shit that makes you want to fucking lose your mind. Like, what the hell is wrong with people, you know? So letters from the psych ward, you know, everybody can relate to that. And then, you know, the queen of everything, you know, most guys have their queen, you know, like, my wife is my fucking queen of everything. Like, I adore and love this woman. She's healed me and helped me.
Indeed, sir.
So, you know, like I said, all these songs, you know, they're very healing. There's one which is going to be our next single called Dirty Halo. And, you know, that's definitely an ayahuasca-induced song. And after these trips on ayahuasca, which lasted 10, 12 hours, like, I would fucking write for hours, like, journaling and also writing lyrics, and the lyrical content on Letters from the Psych Ward is all from the jungle and the ayahuasca, all of it.
Oh, wow. That would have been an amazing experience as well. I've started seeing more research and countries and governments getting behind this kind of thing, the natural, you know what I mean, like the LSD and the acid and the ayahuasca going over there. That would have been a hell of an experience for you, kind of, not only going into the Amazon, but going through that and kind of a soul healing journey as well.
Very wild.
Dude, you know, I've done, growing up, I did lots of acid and even mescaline and mushrooms, but the ayahuasca is in a league of its own. It's not even comparable. The one thing it's comparable to is this other tribal indigenous medicine from Africa called Iboga, or Ibogaine, it's also known as. But those two things, ayahuasca and Ibogaine, are the most powerful medicines on the fucking planet. Like, there's nothing more. There's also 5-MeO-DMT, which will take you to other spiritual realms and shit. But this stuff takes you to these realms. I call them realms. And you're behind a veil, you're looking through the veil, and you go to these places and you're like, oh fuck, I know this place. And you're like, you don't know that you know the place, but when you get there, you're like, oh yeah, this place again. So, and it enables you to deal with trauma, I saw Todd came to me in a vision. And in fact, many of my friends came to me, all of them, in the visions in ayahuasca. In fact, when Todd came to me, he was in a pharaoh's tomb, right? And there were these girls standing around him in front of the tomb. And they're like, oh, that's Todd's youth. That's Todd's youth. And I was like, get away. He's resting. And, you know, even in like behind the fucking veil, I was trying to, you know, help him. But, you know, and I was like, okay. So he came to me two or three times in the pharaoh's tomb, which is totally a trip on its own. But then he came to me himself. You know, and I believe this shit to be true. Like, no one's going to tell me any differently that his spirit didn't come to me, because I felt it. I know it. It was life changing. You know, a couple of my friends came to me, all of them, actually. Tracy, Bianca, Mike Starr. I mean, it was heavy, dude.
That would have been an amazing experience on all levels, that as well, going into the Amazon and doing that. Let's jump into the latest track, the title track for the album, Letters from the Psych.
Letters.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's an up-tempo, in-your-face motherfucker. You know, I love that kind of shit. And there's this band from the 90s from New York called Warrior Soul, and they were a huge influence on me. If you don't know them, like, check out a song called Punk and Belligerent, or Wasteland is another one. But, you know, they're a huge influence on me and our sound, actually. And, you know, they're very heavily punk rock influenced. You know, GBH is one of my favorite bands ever. But, like, that up-tempo, in-your-face shit is what Blacklist Union has come to be known for, you know. But, you know, on Letters from the Psych Ward record, there's a few tracks on there now where we found a new niche, which is, like, the Queen of Everything, Dirty Halo. There's one song called Dancing with the Angels. We also covered an Aerosmith song on this record called Mia, which is off Night in the Ruts. And my daughter, I have a daughter named Mia that was named after Mia Tyler and that song. And we covered Mia. We just shot a video for that song as well. So that should be coming out here in the next couple of months. But man, there's a lot of great songs on this record. Out on the Jones is another one. Like, that's pretty self-explanatory, you know, that title. Keys to the Kingdom is another one of my favorites. So, you know, people that have been following us all these years, or if you don't know us even, and you pick up this record and listen to these songs, like, you're going to fucking not be disappointed, to tell you that.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to diving into this one. Sounds really exciting. Where'd you record? Who'd you record with?
So, you know, Chris Johnson has been our producer since day one, and he's who I wrote this record with. And we recorded it at a place called East West Studios here in LA.
Oh yeah,
we recorded back to Momo. We recorded back to Momo there for the most part too. I really like it there. So,
yeah, awesome.
Awesome.
Album does drop in September, people. Everybody go out, grab some Blacklist Union. As you said, they got four great albums out already, a couple of new singles off the forthcoming album, which does drop in September. Everybody get some Blacklist Union in the stereo today. Crank it up really loud. The neighbors are going to want to hear it. Tony, do you have any last words, shout outs, thank yous, or anything else you'd like to add in there, my friend?
Yeah, thank you for having us. And, you know, thank you for everybody who supported us. And for those that don't know us and love rock and roll, check us out because we won't disappoint.
Definitely crank it up really loud. Yes, sir. Cheers, mate.
Thank you so much.